From the San Antonio Express News, this is The Docket with courts and crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala as she breaks down the trials in the Bexar County Courthouse. I'm Joy Marie Scott. It's been a busy week at the Bexar County Justice Center. Proceedings for some murder cases that had significant coverage when the crimes occurred have gone to court and they've been resolved. We're going to look at two of them. First, the brutal killing of Laura Evangeline Rodriguez Carter. She was 33 and a graduate student at the University of Texas at San Antonio when she was shot 5 times in the head in a Southeast Side neighborhood on January 11, 2015. The defendant, Miguel Martinez, was recently retried in this case, and he was found guilty by a Bexar County jury.
It's great to be back, Joy. You know, this murder case involving Miguel Martinez was retried, and this case sparked the feud more than 2 years ago between then Bexar County District Attorney Nico LaHood and Joe D. Gonzalez, whom at the time was one of two defense attorneys representing Martinez when he first went to trial in February of 2017.
I remember that was quite the public feud when it occurred. And wasn't that what prompted Joe Gonzalez to put his hat in the race and for DA, right following that incident?
Yes, it was, Joy. At that time, LaHood and one of his assistants, Jason Goss, were prosecuting the case against Martinez. And after a few days of testimony, proceedings would end in a mistrial. The defense later alleged prosecutorial misconduct and claimed LaHood's office didn't disclose a prior sexual encounter that had happened between another prosecutor and a key witness in the Martinez case. And then while they argued about that in State District Judge Lori Valenzuela's chambers, LaHood threatened to destroy the practices of the two defense attorneys, Joe Gonzalez and Christian Henriksen. Now, at that time, Senior District Judge W.C. Kirkendall of Seguin took over this case, and he ended up ruling that LaHood engaged in an unprofessional and uncalled-for rant. Now, Nico LaHood has denied ever making those threats, and in March of this year, the State Bar of Texas put him on probation for a year, and he was ordered to pay almost $10,000 in attorney's fees and expenses and refrain from further misconduct. Now, that incident that happened in Judge Valenzuela's chambers prompted her to recuse herself from the case. And you'll recall that after all this happened, there was a hearing that was held in Judge Valenzuela's court where she actually had to testify that she heard LaHood threaten Gonzalez and Christian Henriksen and that she considered it to be official oppression, which is a Class A misdemeanor. So, Judge Kirkendall ended up, presiding over that case. And, you know, that is how this whole, situation occurred, that, Judge Valenzuela was no longer going to be over this case.
Got it. Okay. So a jury found Martinez guilty of murder, and they sent him to prison for life. So just remind us about the case and how did the proceedings go?
Well, the courtroom was packed at the Cadena Reeves Justice Center for this trial, virtually for the almost week and a half that it went on in the 437th State District Court, which is Judge Valenzuela's court, by the way. But Judge Kirkendall was the presiding judge in the Martinez case still. So when I say it was packed, Joy, it was the victim side of the gallery. Laura Carter's parents, Jim and Jan Carter, were there every day, along with their daughter, Hannah, and numerous friends and relatives. And this time around, Joe Gonzalez is now the new district attorney, and Christian Henriksen is one of his chiefs. So because of their previous involvement in the case, they could not prosecute it for Bexar County. And Jason Goss, who now works for LaHood in private practice, was appointed the special prosecutor in the case, and defense attorneys Joel Perez and Daniel de la Garza represented Martinez. So when this case happened, police were called to Arid Road on the southeast side for a report on the shooting. And when they arrived, they found a car running, and inside was Mara Carter. Her feet were crossed, her hands were in her pockets, in a very relaxed position, witnesses would testify. And we learned in testimony that Mara Carter had become addicted to heroin and was getting it from Martinez, whom she had met through a friend. They had an association for about a year, Martinez told police. And testimony at this trial established that Carter decided to use some of her student loan money that she expected to come in as an investment. And how this would work was she would give Martinez some money so he could buy drugs, and he was to sell them and return Carter's monetary investment plus more. She told a friend she wouldn't have to work, or worry rather, she wouldn't have to worry about working because she would be making money from the drug sales, and she could concentrate on her graduate studies. And days before the killing, Carter withdrew $7,000, which was never found.
Unless the docket has covered several cases involving drug deals that have gone bad, but nothing quite like this. Graduate student using heroin and wanting to use the loan money to invest with a dealer to make money so they won't have to work. That's a lot of money and certainly a lot of drugs.
Yes, Joy, it obviously was not the best plan. And as Jason Goss explained it in his arguments during his trial, Mara Carter had lost her way. She still wanted to do good in school. So her idea was to use, say, like about $1,500 of her loan money at a time. So with this investment plan, Carter was supposed to make back that amount plus more for each drug transaction. But a key witness, and really Martinez's driver, like his getaway driver after the incident, testified that Martinez actually admitted to him that he killed Mara Carter because he felt she was going to snitch him out. Gregory Dalton testified that Martinez, his friend, told him that he shot Mara Carter 5 times and did so to dispute to Gregory Dalton media accounts that came out at the time that reported that she had been shot once. And this was a really chilling display in court when Dalton used his fingers and his thumbs on both hands to demonstrate what the defendant had told him. And he held up his hands and he said, "I smoked her just like this. Bam, 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 bam." Now, Mara Carter was shot in the face and in the head 5 times. And, you know, that's just... It was just a really, really brutal crime.
I can't imagine. You mentioned the family was there, and it must have been hard for them to, you know, hear this and witness this, not once, but now twice with the retrial. How did they respond?
You know, I spoke to Jim and Jan Carter after the sentencing, and they're a very lovely couple. They were glad. You know, you could see the relief on their faces, but there's always that sadness that remains. They were glad that Miguel Martinez will have to serve at least 30 years before he would be eligible for parole. And parole eligibility, as we've talked about before, is not always guaranteed. But the Carters said that, you know, going through these proceedings again was as if they had lost her all over again. You know, they remained in the courtroom for the entire time, including when graphic photographs of their daughter were shown. They looked down but maintained a presence in court for about a week and a half. And they concurred with an argument that Jason Goss had made to the jury that putting Miguel Martinez away wasn't only going to be, you know, for justice for the Carter family. His argument was about public safety and about, you know, he would bring up the videos that were shown when Laura Carter picked up Miguel Martinez from the parking lot of a Taco Cabana, and they drove just blocks away to Arid Road. And he also brought up the fact that, you know, Gregory Dalton picked him up and actually went and dropped him off back at the same place. All of this was caught on video. And also the calm demeanor that the defendant had during the interview with police when, you know, he's called in and the police are, you know, like, do you know why you're here? Well, we're here to talk to you about a homicide. And he's being very relaxed and very nonchalant. And he actually asks, homicide, what does that mean? And so, you know, he brings that to the jury that, you know, this isn't just about justice for Laura Carter. This is justice for the community, too, because, you know, this was a very, very brutal killing. And I keep using the word chilling, but, you know, when you see something like that and you see the aftermath of it, like the photographs that they show in trial, and then you see a defendant who videos placed him at the scene and witnesses placed him at the scene moments before the killing happened, you know, that becomes a very important part, and that is one of the things that Jan Carter talked about, that it wasn't just about Laura, but it was about the safety of the community.
Did anything happen to Dalton, his friend, the driver?
Not a thing.
Was there any reason to charge him, or?
There doesn't seem to be anything that placed him anywhere at the scene other than when he was in the area when he picked up Miguel Martinez and discussions that they had after the crime had happened. Because Gregory Dalton was interviewed by police and part of his interview was shown, and he was able to testify at the trial. That's a very good question. In a lot of cases, there are lots of people either involved in some way or people who have been associated with a particular scene. I will use as an example the case of Daniel Lopez in the killing of Jose Luis Menchaca, the baseball bat killing. There were a lot of people involved in that case, a lot of witnesses that didn't end up getting charged with anything, but were able to provide key testimony to be able to put someone else behind bars.
So there was also another case settled this week. We did say it was a busy week. And this one was in regards to the killing of a teenager a few days before Thanksgiving, 2 years ago in 2017. So tell us about that one.
Yes, this was the murder trial of Robert Leon Allen. He was found guilty of killing Noel Reyna at a huge gathering of teenagers at a Northeast Side Whataburger restaurant where teen girls were to fight in the parking lot. Witnesses saw a confrontation in the parking lot in which Allen struck Reyna in the face. And Reyna displayed a gun, witnesses said, in this trial. And this gun had been in the waist of his pants. Now, witnesses said Allen ran across the parking lot to retrieve an AK-47 and went back to where Reyna was standing and shot the boy 3 times, killing him. Now, the defense argued in this case that Robert Allen acted in self-defense, while the prosecutors said it was an intentional killing, stating that, you know, one, like a person in imminent danger, doesn't take the time to go get a gun and then come back and shoot someone else. They said if a person is really facing imminent danger, that they would have just kept running.
So I remember when you sent the verdict in, a lot of us in the newsroom were a little surprised. It had quite an interesting twist after the jury's verdict.
Yes, Joy. As this jury that had just convicted Robert Leon Allen of, you know, guilty, found him guilty of murder, they were about to come back in the next morning and hear opening arguments. Now, this jury deliberated well into the night. I received a text message a little before 10 o'clock saying that they had just come back with a guilty verdict. So the next morning, 12 hours later, they are supposed to come in and hear opening arguments in this punishment phase. But instead, attorneys on both sides approached Judge Velia Meza, who's the presiding judge of the 226 State District Court where this trial happened, and told her that Allen decided he did not want to go to the jury that sentenced him for his punishment. And that actually can happen, because there are some times when, you know, you have both phases of a trial. Mm-hmm. You have phase one, which is guilt and innocence, and then you have phase two, which is punishment. Now, sometimes a defendant will want to just have that first phase heard by a jury of their peers, and then they want to roll the dice and go before the judge. Or sometimes they want to just go ahead and have the jury, you know, do both phases. But in this particular case, it seems that the defense and the prosecutors were able to come up with what we like to call we call them plea deals when they're going to be negotiating what their plea might be, if they're either going to plead guilty, not guilty, or no contest. But since this had already happened, since the jury had already found him guilty, he decided that he was going to take a 35-year prison term. Mm-hmm. So this actually went very quickly, because when you have the state and the defense agreeing to something along with the defendant, and they take it to the judge, and the judge has already dismissed the jury, you know, it's a done deal.
I remember when your report came in, we were like, wait, did they missed a step, or something got skipped?
So as long as everybody agrees to it, it can happen that quickly. So, you know, he agreed to this 35-year prison term, and because the way these things work, whenever you have a situation, they call it a 3G offense. And there's no 3 and there's no G in it. I don't understand what that means. I'm not a lawyer. But basically, my understanding is whenever there is an affirmative finding of assault with a deadly weapon, in this case, a gun, or in other cases, it's been a knife or whatever it has been that has ended someone's life, they have to serve at least half of their prison term before they're eligible for parole. So he is in his 20s. He will have to serve half of a 35-year prison term before he's going to be able to be considered for release.
Got it. So thank you, Liz, for bringing us up to speed on what's going on in the Bexar County Courthouse. A lot happened this week, as we said. And so we will continue next week when we'll discuss the removal of a visiting judge accused of using racial slurs in a courtroom. This was part of your reporting this past week. You can follow this case and the two we discussed earlier. Follow all of Elizabeth Zavala's crime and court reporting at expressnews.com. And for the San Antonio Express News, this is The Docket. I'm Joy Marie Scott.